April 28, 2021, it's the Watt for Pedro show. Watch for Pedro show. Happy Wednesday, last Wednesday of the month.
All right.
I'm going to say bye-bye to April 2021. Start off the show, John Coltrane doing Transition. Getting ready for May Day. And then Alec K. Redfern. Redfern?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Ha, people, you can tell that I'm not totally man alone. Yes, Brother Matt is at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point because still quite in quarantino mode, but I'm not totally man alone because of those Skype engineers in Estonia with their software invention. I got Brother Alec K. Redfern. Redfern. Let me get that. You deserve respect. Redfern, right. All the way from Providence. Welcome aboard, Alec.
Good to be here, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, Providence, I've had buttloads of fucking good gigs there. I've always done. Going back to the living room. West Lane and his mother, they'd make you fried chicken, you know. Minuteman had some great gigs there, and I think he was killed on a bicycle or something. Very tragic. It was near a Samsonite, a suitcase factory downtown.
Sounds right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But enough about Watch Story. I want to get into your fucking journey through music, Alec. Please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Earliest musical recollection. I guess my earliest musical recollection was finding a 7-inch. When I was probably like, I was going to the barber shop with my dad and I just found like a 7-inch single of Dreamweaver by Gary Wright. And
I got to tell you, he lived up the hill here at Palos Verdes for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw him open up. I think so. Somebody told me that anyway. Maybe it was Patrick Moraz. They both had poodle haircuts. But I saw him open for Slade. And 10 years after, he had nothing but synthesizers. Him and two other guys played synthesizers.
I believe it. I believe it, man. But yeah, that record was, I got it. And, before I even heard it, I was talking to everyone at the barbershop about what the B-side sounded like, you know. And because it was a song called Let It Out. I don't actually remember what that song sounds like. But I thought it was going to be like the most rockin' thing ever because of the title. I said, you know, the first song, the first side's kind of mellow. But this is just going to be, you know. Incredible. And it was, you know, it was more mellow than I was expecting, but I did enjoy it.
Okay, that's your earliest. Remember, it's a Watch for Pedro show. There's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers. And you got a fucking cup there or something because you keep banging it on the fucking table.
I have a cup of coffee. Put it over here.
Get a coaster or a book or some shit because that gets fucking irritating.
All right, I got another table over here.
All right, that's okay. Alec, in the pad, you grew up in Providence?
I grew up in Mansfield, Massachusetts, which is about, you know, like 20 minutes north.
A little north. Now, everything's a little way because people, Rhode Island's a smaller state, but not in heart, not in heart. Now, in this pad, you grew up west, is it in the middle of Mass or west?
No, it's sort of like, it's southeastern Mass, so it's not far from.
I know where it is. Yeah, they get the sign with the turkey on it when you cross the border.
Yes, there is that. There's a.
I remember. Now, in that pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
There was a piano in the basement. My father had painted it gray with house paint, though. And it came with the house. My parents weren't very musical, but I would mess around on the piano a lot. And then eventually I ended up just destroying it with hammers later when I became a frustrated teenager. And it was already so broken down. So then I became fascinated with the piano guts and playing the piano guts after that.
But you never had to take for a lot of people, guests on my show, the ordeal of piano lessons.
I didn't take piano lessons until my 30s, and I only took a little bit.
My 30s, it's a little, maybe you're a little more on equal footing with the fucking teacher. It seems the teacher is usually the problem.
Indeed. And it was funny because I did take guitar lessons very briefly when I was like 11 or 12.
Okay, how did that happen? Why did that, how? What was the situation there?
Well, I was starting to get interested in rock and roll. You know, I had come up through like Kiss, you know, that was sort of for people my age, that was particularly.
We saw them like four times before they had an album. They would open up for anybody. We saw them with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band with fucking Wishbone Ash, Savoy Brown and shit. Yeah, they'd open up for anybody. And I remember when the first album came out, it was so fucking slow.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, compared to the live set, you mean?
Yeah, well, that's all we knew, right? It was these gigs. One time they broadcasted it over the radio, so we actually taped. You know, a cassette player next to the speaker, and you just all hissed out and shit. But while you're doing work, it'd be fun to hear. Okay. So, yeah, rock and roll and arena rock shit. And okay, what about at school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, you know, like, I didn't really start formally playing. Well, okay, I had a band, but I didn't really learn to play music until I was about 16. And my parents sort of always had I was always interested in music, but they kind of had it in their, they were kind of old school, and they had it in their heads that, like, you have to start really young if you're going to be a musician. That was just, like, kind of the riff. They said, like, you know, they had friends whose kids were musicians, and they started them super young, so they were just saying, oh, it's too late. And I was like, no, it's not too late.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like the fucking Mozart trip, where his daddy, like, kind of, it's kind of the Disney mom thing.
Right, right.
Or what they do with the K-pop, right? You get them in the dormitory when they're five.
Right.
Start raising them. Sometimes, but a lot of times, they just turn into fucking puppets. And they have terrible personal life, right? They kill themselves. No, Joe Baez, Saccharine Trust, guitarist, right? He starts playing guitar because of the movement. Inspired, 27 years old, and in a couple of years he's transcribing Charlie Parker solos. So I don't believe in that. Nothing against your parents, but it was probably they were going by some kind of conventional shit. I won't even blame them.
Right, it was some kind of, I think it was sort of just, you know, they came up, it's funny, my dad's father, who I never met, he died before I was born, used to play guitar a little bit, and would sing like Cole Porter songs around the house when he was drunk. And you know, so I kind of feel like they sort of, my father had maybe, I don't know if he had negative associations. My father always liked music. I mean, it was always like church music stuff. He was, you know, very devout Catholic, but he also liked, my parents liked John Denver and Neil Diamond and the Carpenters and stuff like that, all of which, you know, I've come to appreciate as an older person, but wasn't too into as a kid, you know. I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about your pop having kind of a negative view towards music. Now, my pop, the thing was, how are you going to make a living, boy? You can piss in the winds only so long. So
exactly.
We freaked him out when he found out, you know, I started sending him postcards from tour.
Right.
Especially after D-Boone got killed. He didn't know I was doing this for a living. So you told me you started a fucking band before you knew how to play.
My friend Tom, we were called Classic Migraine. We started about 1984. I was about 14, and we wanted to be a heavy metal band, but we did not really have any musical ability whatsoever, and we didn't have electric guitars. We had two acoustic guitars and one of those little Casio keyboards, and we would just bang and scream and write these and improvise these ridiculous songs about the devil and, you know, like stuff that was happening around our school and you know, horror movies and stuff like that. And eventually, like over the course of that band, you know, Tom actually got an electric guitar. I started learning how to play, and I played a little bit of bass. I was starting to play bass. That was really my first, like, serious instrument.
What kind of bass? I'm a little prejudiced here.
All right, yeah, yeah.
Okay. What was your first bass?
My first bass was a Fender, what is it, like, short scale Fender Stang. Music Master?
Stang. Or Music Master, yeah. They had two models. What they called in those days, student models.
Right.
Marketing, right? Like when you said metal, I'm thinking genre, another marketing tool.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because now we're grown up, right? Music is music. Fuck that shit. So did Classic Migraine ever do a gig?
We played one show. We released 18 cassettes, but we played one show.
Tell me about that show.
It was great. It was just in a friend's garage. You know, it was a handful of most of the people. We cleared most of the audience out.
Yeah, yeah. Billy and the Descendants call those hall rakers. And they even call them
hall rakers.
Yeah, like you just cleared out.
I have been in many a hall raker over the years, definitely.
Look, I want to play Tramadoliday.
Oh, yeah, Tramadoliday.
Tramadoliday, yeah. My pronunciation, sorry.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. No! eigenlijk altijd wel aanwezig. Sluimerend. Net boven of onder het oppervlak. Wachtend. Op één verkeerde aanraking. Eén verkeerde beweging. Eén verkeerde vorm van oogcontact. Eigenlijk wat dan ook. Als het maar een fucking excuus is om helemaal los te gaan. Weet je, ik ben meer dan een beetje geïrriteerd. Ik heb zeker een reden, maar die weet ik niet meer. Ging over iets wat je zei, ook al was het niet eens verkeerd toch. Kritisch gezegd, passioneel beredeneerd. Wederom, mijn wezen is niet een enkele keer. Het blijft niet bij een incident, zeer geïrriteerd. Blijkbaar, ontoorrekening is vatbaar, verkaart. De drakenvaart is tussen, de vloer wordt lava. Laat me onbedaardbaar, raak me niet aan. Je hele fucking oude netjes staan me niet aan. Ik sta hier naast een gezicht aan elkaar. Laat het niet gaan, gunnen je mij aan mijn liaan. Doe het niet bang, ik sta er dicht bij de rand. Doe me niet bang, ik sta er dicht bij de rand. Ik doe mijn uiterste best om mijn hoofd niet te verliezen. Ik doe mijn uiterste best om mijn hoofd niet te verliezen. Riemeloos, auto in zijn vrij, rollen en rammen. Was het vroeger beter? Nee, ik denk dat het de bitterheid is. In de realiteit, in gewijs en gedacht tegen naïeve blije shit uit je kindertijd. De zeiken wint in een strijd. Je kent de klappen van de zet, je houdt er rekening mee. Ineens stoot zich niet twee maal in dezelfde steen. Als de scheid de ventilator bereikt, het regent negativiteit, dan doe je gewoon gezellig mee. Onvrede gegrift in mijn DNA, decennia, meditatie later nog. Onbekwaam, vloeken, tieren en razen. De voornaamste redenen van mijn bestaan. Problemen, dat kom ik tegenaan. Doe me niet bang, ik sta er dicht bij de rand. Doe me niet bang, ik sta er dicht bij de rand. Doe me niet bang, ik sta er dicht bij de rand. Doe me niet bang, ik sta er dicht bij de rand. Ik doe mijn uiterste best om mijn hoofd niet te verliezen. Ik doe mijn uiterste best om mijn hoofd niet te verliezen.
Public house. cause they all have heard some breaking news that the wings on their bodies were meant to be used. And they flew, and they flew right into my heart, and they flew.
Public hound, cause they all have heard some. Thank you.
What for Pedro show? Yeah, Tramadoliday. Maybe I got it right this time. That's Alec K. Redford and the Eyesores. Germs after that. Lexicon Devil live Germs. Great band, big influence on Minutemen. Bombus Prendon after that from D.C. area. Stalked by Crows. Still kicking like Kato. Juan van de Dag out of Groningen in the Netherlands with... Ooh, this is kind of tough. Beetje geïrriteerd. So I destroy another language. Sorry. It's a Dutch one. It's your turn. Penguins from Water Boogie System. And Trudge into the Rhythm of the Pleistocene from Tommy Dahill up in Alaska. And finally, Alec K. Redfern and Eyesores. There's a Bat Living in My Room. So that gig was a success. And 18 cassettes?
We made 18 cassettes. I don't know where any of them are, but they did exist at one point. My friend Tom might still have a few copies. He had, like, all the masters.
Now, what about how many tunes a cassette was there?
Usually, like, you know, between, like, 6 and 11, depending on how short the pieces were.
Okay, so you're talking, like, way over 100 tunes.
Yeah, it might be, actually.
And the originals, right? You ain't doing trying to copy off records.
Oh, no, we couldn't. We couldn't. We didn't even have the skills for that.
Okay, what evolves from Classic Migraine?
Well, it's interesting. Like, from there, I started, I, like, wanted to get serious about playing bass. And, like, somewhere in the middle of Classic Migraine, I discovered punk rock. I think part of that was in service to the band. I was like, well, we can't really pull off metal, but we might be able to pull off some punk rock. So I wanted to listen to some punk rock. And I bought Nevermind the Bollocks by the Sex Pistols and Damage by Black Flag. And this was like 85, 86. So I listened to Nevermind the Bollocks. I was expecting it to be more shocking or something. It just sounded like rock and roll to me. It was good. I liked it, but it seemed like more like sort of
New York Dolls with the English accent.
Exactly. But then I listened to Damaged, and that was like, hey, it was like where you've been all my life, you know? And,
yeah, there's a song on there. Well, there's two Damages, right?
And right.
Both of them are intense, but the first one, I can give you some insight how it was recorded. The singing anyway. Hank turned off all the lights. He taped an SM57 mic to each side of his temples, so there's two of them, and just ran around the room with the lights on, banging into the bulkheads and shit while he was singing it.
Is that the slow one or the fast one?
Yeah, the slow one. You're with Henry now.
Oh, that stuff is so great, man.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, and Spot produced it, and it's just beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous. And that's a two-guitar lineup,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Dezzo. Wild. Dezzo's on the other guitar. He had moved from singing to bring Chuck One and Hank in as a singer.
Right, right. Wow, man, good stuff.
Yeah, that's the version that, and Billy Stevenson, because Robo couldn't tour, so Billy Stevenson from Descends came on the drums.
And that's when he joined.
That's he has a little tenure there, I think, up to In My Head, and then Minutemen, first time we go overseas, and we do it's also part of a big U.S. tour. We're all 10 of us in one van at that period. So that good. But enough about what about you? Okay, so you really dig the Damage record, so it has an effect on you.
It does. It shatters my entire world. It was like I was on a school vacation and, I was going to Catholic school at the time, so we had to wear uniforms. But I left, this sort of like dorky bowl haircut, metal haired kid and, like young stupid kid, and then came back 2 weeks later with spiked hair and a leather jacket. But, like just whatever leather jacket I had lying around that I just wrote shit on and stuff like that. It was all very, it wasn't like I went out shopping or anything like that. I just said, I'm going to commit to this because there's something happening here. And it was the thing that really set everything in motion. it all started from like Rise Above, the needle drop on Rise Above.
Yeah.
Everything just unfurled from there, my entire life, really.
Yeah, keep me alive. That's Damage 2. And I think Damage 1 is the slow one. But maybe I'm wrong.
I think you're right.
It was a little bit ago. So, well, fuck. The first thing I know of you is Eyesores, but there must have been something in between, right?
Yes, there was a couple other projects. After, like, Classic Migraine, you know, like, Tom and I, we still hung out a lot, but we kind of, you know, as I got more into the punk rock thing, and he was kind of just making more friends at school, like, because we were, like, really our only, the two of us were really our only friends at the time. And I met my friend Don, who's, like, who was a guitar player. Initially, we asked him to join Classic Migraine, and then he showed up, like, expecting us to be a real band, and,
We're a real band, 18 fucking cassettes.
Right. And, you know, I'd say he could actually play a little bit. He's been pretty decent, you know, this very natural musician. And, you know, so we wanted to do some, like, heavy metal shit. We wanted to do some of that new speed metal shit that was happening, right? You know, like, like Venom or Slayer or that kind of stuff. And this is sort of pre the Damage discovery, you know. But, you know, I gave Don a copy of our cassettes and didn't really expect to hear from him again. But I guess he, like, just listened to the cassettes that we gave him over and over again, just laughing and laughing. He just thought it was so funny. And we just kind of stayed in touch. And then he was my sort of punk rock buddy. He was like, you know, we would go to shows together. You know, we became, you know, the sort of, like, stuff with girls, like, all the teenage crises and stuff, he was there. He was like, my partner in crime, really. And so, you know, eventually I picked up a bass and started learning to play. You know, one summer I sat down with some Mel Bay books and just really, like, dug in. And, you know, just got enough, like, an understanding of how, you know, like, how to arpeggiate chords and stuff like that. You know, just standard bass.
Yeah, but that's not standard. Most guys learn bass by learning licks.
Right.
What you're talking about is the Carole Kaye thing where you actually get inside the chords and arpeggiate them.
Yeah, and it was good. It was, you know, so, like, once I got to the point where
You were talking about your parents and mm-hmm. Neil Diamond and all that. She's on all those fucking recordings.
That's right, yeah. She's on those. Yeah, because she was, like, a Wrecking Crew adjunct, right? Or was she a part of Wrecking Crew?
Yeah, but she said they never called themselves that. You know, there's a lot of drama with those. Who's the Tommy Tedesco guitar? Hal Blaine on the drums. Earl Palmer too. Yeah, I mean, crack guys. But anyway, go on. You're teaching yourself bass.
Yeah, and so, like, Don and I had this job. You know, we went to two different high schools. We started out at the same Catholic school, but then we both split back to our, like, regular high school for the last year or two of high school. And but Don and I had this job, like a sort of third shift job on one night a week. So we would go to school during the day, and on Friday nights we would go insert flyers into the newspaper, the local newspaper. And, you know, usually, like, lack of sleep would really make some really inspired, funny shit happen, you know. And so, like, one morning we just, you know, I had my bass on me, and we just started, we even set, like, a little Casio drum machine up or something, and just started jamming. And eventually that formed into this trio called Laverne with this drummer, Art Tedeschi, and my buddy Don Larson on guitar, me on bass. And that was it was an instrumental band. We had a couple of songs with vocals, but it was mostly instrumental. And it definitely had a strong SST vibe. Definitely. Cause we were obsessing with it. Like, Don, you know, like, Don and I were really obsessed with SST by this point. And, you know, so, like, stuff like the Minutemen records, like the Firehose shit, like the Black Flag stuff. We saw Saccharine Trust, in the previous summer. So, like, the, you know, and that was the We Became Snakes era. So, you know, they were doing that wild, jazzy.
That record is the one I produced.
Oh, right.
And Radio Tokyo. I'll tell you one story, very short.
Yeah.
There's a song about pain. Pain is real, Jack is saying.
Yes.
Pain is real. I can't remember the name of the song, but he did that vocal. Maybe you heard about Hank doing his thing with the mics taped to his head. So he turns off all the fucking lights. You know, music's already done. It's just vocals. He gets on top of Ethan's piano, stand-up piano, and hits himself in the balls with the microphone and jumps off and without catching himself. Hits the deck with the face. I couldn't really... I'm just hearing the crunch. Yeah. So go on. Yeah. He's a, what do you call that? Method acting.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Oh,
so,
God.
So
like,
you guys are feeling a big influence from the SST bands.
Absolutely, yeah. Because we liked the hardcore chop and the meat, you know, 2-4 madness, you know, like circle jerks and, you know, like that, all that sort of like classic, you know, particularly the California shit, though we liked the DC stuff too and some of the Midwestern bands like Diekreuzen and, but we kind of also like knew that we wanted more. We wanted like that this wasn't going to hold us. It wasn't going to hold our attention forever. We were both kind of expansive dudes, I think, at the time. And so then we just started, you know, we discovered like Meat Puppets and Minutemen and stuff like that through the SST catalogs that would come with the Black Flag records we bought. You know, like we would obsessively read through all those catalogs and like wonder about like the Raymond Pettibon artwork and what the hell does that mean? You know, like, you know, stuff like Butthole Surfers and Swans and Sonic Youth and that stuff was starting to leak into our consciousness too. So the first band was pretty, you know, like Laverne ended up being a pretty eclectic thing. It only lasted about 2 years. We played some parties. That was the next band. We had like one show at ASU 20 in Providence. Eventually that band turned into another band called Wavering Shapes we had my buddy Bill Reed, was in it for a while singing and playing guitar. Young guy named Matt McLaren, who I went to, high school with and our moms were friends. He is the current iSource drummer. He joined in on second percussion and, one of our last gigs was opening for the Meat Puppets at the Living Room. And this would have been like around 88, 89 or so. So that's what that was, you know, like that stage was also like that. Wavering Shapes and Laverne were kind of the same band, but with slightly different, I feel like by the time we got to Wavering Shapes, we were getting into jazz a little bit. We're listening to the Doors a lot for some reason. That sort of sound, there's something about we wanted to get a little mellower, you know, like, or a little bit more like rainy, you know, lots of ride cymbals and shit. Eventually, we were hanging out at this place called ASQ 20 in Providence, which was like a little arts collective. And they had this house sort of absurdist performance art troupe called Meatballs Fluxus. And, you know, I would go down. It was basically interesting because it was this really crazy Fluxus Dada-influenced performance art combined with, like, free improvisational music. So they would do music skit or something like that, you know, like, and, eventually they asked me their bass player couldn't do a tour. So they asked me to do this tour. I was about 20 at this point, 1990. And, that was my first tour. So I had like kind of left the other band to do this crazy performance art thing. And I learned about hall raking really heavily during that period.
Yeah, well, there's also another name for those character builders.
Yes.
So you built a lot of character.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've only had the experience of complete silence after finishing a set, like not even just a room full of people just staring at you. You know, like that only happened once or twice, and it was all with that project.
Okay.
You know?
We're out of time for the first hour, April 28th, 2021 edition of Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, Alec K. Redfern. Hold tight for hour two. April 28th, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
world how to be the life of the party. 1971, I'm trying to outwit this virus. You might understand or step around the corner for a cheeky, cheeky, cheeky. Does it make you feel uncomfortable? Yeah. No. They complete me. Harness that race driver. Flog him till he's dead and hang him by his head and put a bullet in his chest. Take a rain check and a paycheck and a train wreck and a piece of wet tech. No whales. Old hag, old rag, wet rag, back foot, you suck. Get around and get away, get away, get away.
You Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Started off the second hour with the opposite from Alec K. Redfern and Eyesores. And Ben Salter out of Tasmania with Nowhere Else. Jesse Sheldon. His brother Lucas out of Sydney. Two Each Hand. Joshua M. Robbins. Charleston. Good morning, you said. From the other Carolina, Dex Rom Weber duo, although I hear a bass, so maybe he plays some bass too. It's a cover of The Who, So Sad About Us. I love this tune. And Dex, he had a great band called Flat Duo Jets. Great cat.
Oh, yeah.
Lost his sister, the drummer lady for Let's Active. Great. I got to play with the, yeah, they had a drummer man named Crow, right? Flat Duo Jet. Then Ghost Lanes from DUME. But before we get into learning about DUME, let's talk about the Eyesores. So you educate yourself with on the road with some vaudeville action with this Fluxus-inspired art troupe, performance troupe.
Yep.
Which is great, you know, because if you're going to learn how to work the room, why not?
Absolutely.
And so tell us about the Eyesore birth.
Okay, well, so, you know, over the course of that, you know, like, while I was in that project, I decided I wanted to learn an instrument where I could play melodies and stuff. And, you know, because everybody in the band played, like, horns. It was a lot of horn players. And, you know, I've been in punk bands and, like, more in the punk scene. I wasn't so used to the horns, so, like, I wanted something more exotic. So I bought an accordion at a pawn shop, you know. And started just kind of teaching myself how to play it and got – and again, like, I started another band that I – before I knew really how to play, you know, just to learn to play the accordion. I learned by writing songs on it, writing these little instrumental things. So the first project was called Space Heater. It evolved into a bigger project called Amoebic Ensemble over the course of the 90s. And then I ended up kind of having a bit of a drug spin out in the mid-90s. And when I came out of that, I started the Eyesores in 1997 because I wanted to do songs. And so, like, the first, you know, my buddy Matt Everett was a – he played bouzouki in the Eyesores. He had just picked up a Telecaster, so he was going to – so I had him play guitar. He wrote a couple songs in the first record too. And my buddy Mark Bedini was playing, like, just found object percussion, like, you know, like turned over chairs and shit like that. And it's funny because our first gig was the reason why I started the band was I owed my friend Wes $75 because I missed rent on he was renting me this tiny windowless room to live in when I was all fucked up. And you know, I went to, you know, I ended up owing him some money and then going to rehab. And then when I got out of rehab, you know, he was like, I'll squash the debt if you do this gig. So that was the birth of the Eyesores in 97. And I was playing accordion and singing by that point. Singing was something that took a long time. I feel like that was the hardest for me. But I sort of started out, like, we wanted to be a songs band. We wanted to be, not quite pop, but we wanted, you know, I was listening to a lot of Johnny Cash and Nick Cave and stuff like that. And it's like, I wanted to write about my experiences and shit. And the first record is really kind of all about my sort of spin out, you know, like, and so, but as each record progressed, it got, we started into a new sound. And the original two guys dropped out. For various reasons, and my buddy Matt McLaren, my old friend from Mansfield, joined on drums. My friend, we had another band called the Barnacle we were doing that was more of a free jazz thing, but I kind of pulled some people over to Barnacle for the new version of Eyesores around 2003, and we eventually ended up with the lineup we have now, which is me, Matt, Anne playing French horn. And Chris Radler's on the string bass.
John Entwistle, French horn. Yeah. And in fact, that song, Pictures of Lily, has a fucking French horn solo in the middle of it.
That's right.
And I use that music to write my very own Piss Bottle Man. Sorry, Pete. Sorry, John. Look, you know, I played some DUME I want to play some more, and then I want to talk about that. This is beautiful origin story. I love it for the Eyesores.
Yeah. Take all the time you need. Take all the time you need. Welcome your enemies. So take all the time you need. You're buried underneath all the rivers, rocks, and trees. I'm water when you need sunshine, sunshine. Take all the time you need to color and believe. Da 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 da. And I'm drifting off to sleep. Some Uber ships this week. I'm here and listening from moons away.
Walk for Pedro. So that chunk of music is bookended by the D-U-M-E. Started with the Black Hen. D-U-M-E. Special Interest with Disco after that. That's brand new. The Mistons, a new band out of Portland, Oregon. It's got Sean from the Cracker Bash along with Micah. And, yeah, big thanks. High Water Style. We used to call those, yeah, kind of pants that showing the fucking half the calf, right? Okay. John Brewster, after that, Take All the Time You Need. Patience. First World Problem. This stuff out of Charleston, too. Oh, you know what? That Joshua M. Robbins was at Charleston. That's Portland, Maine. Fuck what? Damn. Blue. You know, I was telling Alec off air, you know, next month, May, it'll be 20 years of Watt for Pedro show, and I'm still fucking blowing clans. Okay. No excuse. Cat Call after that with from D-U-M-E. Enlighten us to D-U-M-E, Alec.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Enlighten us. Hello?
Oh, sorry. What's happening?
I'm asking you the likeness in regards to D-U-M-E.
Did I write? Sorry, I didn't hear the first half of the question.
In likeness.
Oh, in likeness.
No. E-N-L-I-G-H-T-E-N. Enlighten us.
Yes. Oh, enlighten us. Okay, sorry. I'm having a funny moment
here.
Yeah,
I talk like a fucking idiot. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good.
I can also destroy the English language.
Oh, hey, you know, that's a fine art, the destruction of the English language.
Anyway, enlighten us to D-U-M-E.
Well, all right, so D-U-M-E was, you know, like, as I was going along in the eyesores, I was adding more and more pedals to the accordion, like started with a rap pedal, and then, I threw a wah in there and a big muff, And it was great, you know, working with the accord. Suddenly I kick on a pedal and it just sounded like a crazy feeding back guitar, you know. But I kind of wanted to mess with the sound. I wanted to really get inside of the sound. So it seemed like synthesizers were the next state, like analog synthesizers. I was always kind of fascinated with analog synthesizers. There was a local music store when I was a teenager that had an ARP axe, and I would go in there and just annoy the hell out of them fucking around with it. I wish I'd bought it. It was so dumb that I didn't buy it. But you know how it is. Getting into synths, I ended up getting like an old Moog synth that I was messing with, and I recorded a bunch at home with that. And then I discovered this sort of thing that was happening called Eurorack Modular Synthesis, which is a new format of modular synthesizers. And, you know, modular synths, this, you know, like, were the kind of the synths that were just made up of parts. And the cool thing about Eurorack is you can mix match, it's all like a whole, just a format, like power supply and a rack size. And then there's just modules from like all these different companies. And some of them are clones of old stuff, and some of them are these crazy new digital, like just like really like crazy computer music things just jammed into a little like, you know, Arduino thing. And you mix and match. It's the ultimate postmodern instrument. So right around when Trump got elected, I was getting kind of depressed about politics and the world. So I just said, I can't just spend all my time like freaking out over this and like, you know, just being a doom scrolling news junkie. I mean, I still was, but I wanted something to occupy my brain. So I dug really into this modular synthesis stuff and started buying gear and, just recording and recording and recording at home. And, eventually I ended up playing some gigs and, that's when I came up with the name Doom, which stands for, death or destruction unto my enemies. And it's like a hoodoo curse. From the hoodoo, it's a curse from the hoodoo and conjure tradition down in, which is sort of like a magic tradition that, is informed by like, you know, like voodoo a little bit. And, it's sort of an eclectic magic tradition, folk magic tradition. But, I saw that on one of those little candles, those votive candles, just the word doom with a skull and crossbones on it. It's like, oh, that's so fucking awesome. that just name popped into my head for the project. So, but it's been interesting because I'm working with sequencers. I'm working with these things that it's not as hands-on. It's not as chops oriented. It's more about, it's a completely different way of thinking about music.
Well,
and,
also it's fucking Man Alone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It is. I mean, I've done a little bit of collaboration with people and there's a group called Snow Beasts who are doing a remix record with me right now. They're taking some of my stuff and chopping and screwing it, and it sounds really good so far.
But they're taking stuff that you did alone. Look, we gotta move on because it's the end of the second hour, April 28, 2021 edition. Watt Pedro Show special guest, Alec K. Redfern. Hold tight for hour three. April 28, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Citywide man.
On the way.
Man.
Downtown.
Man.
Pirate cabs.
Downtown.
Pirate cabs.
Downtown.
10 minutes.
On the way.
10 minutes.
Man.
Downtown.
Man.
You're getting close now, man. You're getting close.
Taking us right, old man.
Get rid of us quick, man. You're doing the pressure.
Yeah, taking us right.
Fuck that, man. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Started the third hour off Alec K. Redfern and the Eyesores, Black Eyes. Then Manuel Armida, Jiffy Cavs. He's on a couple episodes ago, or editions, right? That's what we call it. Tim Whole House, Wagon Instrumental after that. And then Alec K. Redfern and the Eyesores with Pterodactyl. Cuneiform.
Yes.
Great, great label.
Amazing label.
Yeah, what's your connect? How'd that happen? He's in D.C., right?
Yeah, he's down in Silver Spring in D.C. Silver Spring, D.C., same thing. Steve Feigenbaum, man. I first became acquainted with him when I saw Cuneiform showcase at ASG 20 in, like, the early 90s. And it was
Cuneiform, that's how you say it. I fucked up.
Oh, I don't know.
I destroy label names, too.
Yeah, I think the first showcase I saw was like Dr. Nerve and a few other like kind of those early Cuneiform bands. And when I was in Space Heater, we had a percussionist who was tight with Steve because they went to Brown together. So that's how I became aware of him. And I pitched him like the first Amoebic Ensemble record, and he said it sounded under rehearsed and that we needed to work on this more. came back to him like 10 years later with The Quiet Room, that record, and he was into it. And Steve has been very supportive and a wonderful man. He's just an amazing dude with great taste.
Yeah, you know, I asked him for some, because he put out the fucking Henry Kaiser got me to do this John Coltrane stuff, which I was petrified to do, you know, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
But and so that's my connect. But then, you know, he goes, well, what would be right? And look, I said, Steve, I'm into music, man. Music is music. I don't get whatever, you know, floats the boat. And so his recommend was you, his first one.
But he knew I was a fan. We talked about, he knows about he's heard my story so many times. Steve once bailed me out of a situation in Belgium, I got a hotel, you know, I did the thing where you go to Europe and you get a hotel and be like, wait a night before doing this, jumping right into shows just to get over the jet lag. And I was a solo tour. I thought I had done everything right. And, there was just some bill I forgot about that just wiped out my bank account and I hadn't paid yet. So I'm in this hotel trying to figure out how the hell I'm going to, you know, I can't, there's no way to sneak out. Nobody could figure out how to wire me any money, and Steve ended up just paying the bill, and it was he saved my ass.
That's really beautiful. And with that, I want to play Carnivore.
Oh yeah.
桃太郎。昔々、あるところに、おじいさんとおばあさんがいました。毎日おじいさんは山へ芝刈りに、おばあさんは川へ洗濯に行きました。ある日おばあさんが川のそばで洗濯をしていますと、川上から大きな桃が一つ、どんぶらこっこすっこっこ、どんぶらこっこすっこっこ、と流れてきました。おやおや、これは見事な桃だこと、おじいさんへのお土産に、うちへ持って帰りましょう。おばあさんはそう言いながら、腰をかがめて桃を取ろうとしましたが、遠くって手が届きません。おばあさんはそこで、あっちの水は辛いぞ、こっちの水は甘いぞ、辛い水は避けてこい、甘い水に寄ってこい、と歌いながら手をたたきました。すると桃はまた、どんぶらこっこすっこっこ、どんぶらこっこすっこっこ、と言いながらおばあさんの前へ流れてきました。おばあさんはニコニコしながら、おじいさんと二人で分けて食べましょう。と言って、桃を拾い上げて、洗濯物と一緒にたらいの中に入れて、えっちらおっちら抱えてお家へ帰りました。夕方になって、おじいさんは山から芝を背負って帰ってきました。おばあさん、今帰ったよ。おやおじいさん、お帰りなさい。待っていましたよ。さあ、早くお上がんなさい。いいものをあげますから。それはありがたいな。なんだね、そのいいものというのは。こう言いながら、おじいさんは、わらじを脱いで、上に上がりました。その間におばあさんは戸棚の中からさっきの桃を抱えてきて、ほらごらんなさいこの桃を、と言いました。ほほう、これはこれは、どこからこんな見事な桃を買ってきたのかね。いいえ、買ってきたのではありません。今日川で拾ってきたのですよ。何、川で拾ってきた。それはいよいよ珍しい。こうおじいさんは言いながら、桃を両手に乗せて、ためつすがめつ眺めていますと、出し抜けに桃はポンと中から二つに割れて、おぎゃーおぎゃーと勇ましい産声を上げながら、かわいらしい赤ちゃんが元気よく飛び出しました。おやおや、まあ。おじいさんもおばあさんもびっくりして、二人一緒に声を立てました。まあまあ、私たちがいつもどうかして子供が一人欲しい欲しいと言っていたものだから、きっと神様がこの子を授けてくださったに違いない。おじいさんもおばあさんも嬉しがってこう言いました。そこで慌てておじいさんがお湯を沸かすやら、おばあさんが産着を揃えるやら、大騒ぎをして赤ちゃんを抱き上げて、産湯を使わせました。するといきなり、うん、と言いながら、 赤ちゃんは抱いているおばあさんの手をはねのけました。おやおや、なんという元気のいい子だろう。おじいさんとおばあさんはこう言って顔を見合わせながら、あーはあーはと面白そうに笑いました。そして桃の中から生まれた子だというので、この子に桃太郎という名をつけました。おじいさんとおばあさんは、それはそれは大事にして桃太郎を育てました。桃太郎はだんだん成長するにつれて、当たり前の子供と比べてずっと体も大きいし、力がバカに強くって、相撲をとっても近所の村中で、かなう者は一人もいないくらいでしたが、そのくせ気立ては優しくって、おじいさんとおばあさんによく孝行しました。桃太郎は15になりました。もうその自分には、日本の国中で、桃太郎ほど強い者はいませんでした。桃太郎はどこか外国へ出かけて力試しをしてみたくなりました。するとその頃、方々外国の島々をめぐって帰ってきた人があって、いろいろ珍しい不思議なお話をした末に、もう何年も何年も船を漕いでいくと、遠い遠い海の果てに鬼ヶ島というところがある。悪い鬼どもがいかめしい黒金のお城の中に住んで、方々の国からかすめ取った尊い宝物を守っていると言いました。桃太郎はこの話を聞くと、その鬼ヶ島へ行ってみたくって、もういても立ってもいられなくなりました。そこで家へ帰ると早速おじいさんの前へ出て、どうぞ私にしばらくお暇をください、と言いました。おじいさんはびっくりして、お前どこへ行くのだ、と聞きました。鬼ヶ島へ鬼退治に行こうと思います。と桃太郎は答えました。ほう、それは勇ましいことだ。じゃあ行っておいで。とおじいさんは言いました。まあそんな遠くへ行くのでは、さぞお腹がお好きだろう。よしよし。お弁当をこしらえてあげましょう、とおばあさんも言いました。そこでおじいさんとおばあさんは、お庭の真ん中に、縁やら縁やら大きな臼を持ち出して、おじいさんが杵を取ると、おばあさんはこね取りをして、ペンタラコッコ、ペンタラコッコ、ペンタラコッコ、ペンタラコッコ、と、お弁当のきびだんごをつき始めました。きびだんごがうまそうに出来上がると、桃太郎の支度もすっかり出来上がりました。桃太郎は、お侍の着るような陣羽織を着て、刀を腰に刺して、きびだんごの袋をぶら下げました。そして、桃の絵の描いてある扇を手に持って、ではお父さん、お母さん、行ってまいります、と言って、丁寧に頭を下げました。じゃあ立派に鬼を退治してくるがいい、とおじいさんは言いました。気をつけて、怪我をしないようにおしよ、とおばあさんも言いました。何、大丈夫です。日本一のきびだんごを持っているから。と桃太郎は言って、 ではごきげんよう、と元気な声を残して出て行きました。おじいさんとおばあさんは門の外に立って、いつまでもいつまでも見送っていました。桃太郎はずんずん行きますと、大きな山の上に来ました。すると草むらの中から、ワンワンと声をかけながら、犬が一匹かけてきました。桃太郎が振り返ると、犬は丁寧にお辞儀をして、桃太郎さん、桃太郎さん、どちらへおいでになります、と尋ねました。鬼ヶ島へ鬼退治に行くのだ。お腰に下げたものは何でございます。日本一のきびだんごさ。ひとつ私にくださいな。お供しましょう。よしよし、やるからついてこい。犬はきびだんごを一つもらって、桃太郎の後からついていきました。山を降りてしばらく行くと、今度は森の中に入りました。すると木の上から、キャッキャッと叫びながら、猿が一匹駆け降りてきました。桃太郎が振り返ると、猿は丁寧にお辞儀をして、桃太郎さん、桃太郎さん、どちらへおいでになります、と尋ねました。鬼ヶ島へ鬼退治に行くのだ。お腰に下げたものは何でございます。日本一のきびだんごさ。ひとつ私にくださいな。お供しましょう。よしよし、やるからついてこい。猿もきびだんごを一つもらって、後からついて行きました。山を降りて、森を抜けて、今度は広い野原へ出ました。すると、空の上で、ケンケンと鳴く声がして、キジが一羽飛んできました。桃太郎が振り返ると、キジは丁寧にお辞儀をして、桃太郎さん、桃太郎さん、どちらへおいでになります、と尋ねました。鬼ヶ島へ鬼退治に行くのだ。お腰に下げたものは何でございます。日本一のきびだんごさ。一つ私にくださいな。お供しましょう。よしよし、やるからついてこい。キジもきびだんごを一つもらって、桃太郎の後からついていきました。犬と猿とキジといい家来ができたので、桃太郎はいよいよ勇み立って、またずんずん進んでいきますと、やがて広い海端に出ました。そこにはちょうどいい具合に、船が一艘つないでありました。桃太郎と三人の家来は、早速この船に乗り込みました。私は漕ぎ手になりましょう。こう言って犬は船を漕ぎ出しました。私は舵取りになりましょう。こう言って猿が舵に座りました。私は物見を務めましょう。こう言って雉がへさきに立ちました。うららかないいお天気で、真っ青な海の上には波一つ立ちませんでした。稲妻のように矢のように、 目の回るような速さで船は走って行きました。ほんの一時間も走ったと思う頃、へさきに立って向こうを眺めていたキジが、あれあれ島が、と叫びながら、パタパタと高い羽音をさせて、空に飛び上がったかと思うと、すーっとまっすぐに風を切って飛んでいきました。桃太郎もすぐ雉の飛び立った後から向こうを見ますと、なるほど、遠い遠い海の果てに、ぼんやり雲のような薄黒いものが見えました。船の進むに従って、雲のように見えていたものが、だんだんはっきりと島の形になって現れてきました。ああ、見える見える、鬼ヶ島が見える。桃太郎がこう言うと、犬も猿も声を揃えて、万歳、万歳、と叫びました。みるみる鬼ヶ島が近くなって、もう固い岩でできた鬼のお城が見えました。いかめしい黒金の門の前に、見張りをしている鬼の兵隊の姿も見えました。そのお城の一番高い屋根の上に、キジが止まって、こちらを見ていました。こうして、何年も何年も漕いで行かなければならないという鬼ヶ島へ、ほんの目をつぶってる間に来たのです。桃太郎は犬と猿を従えて船からひらりと丘の上に降りました。見張りをしていた鬼の兵隊は、その見慣れない姿を見ると、びっくりして慌てて門の中に逃げ込んで黒金の門を固く閉めてしまいました。その時犬は門の前に立って日本の桃太郎さんがお前たちを退治においでになったのだぞ、開けろ開けろと怒鳴りながらどんどん扉を叩きました。鬼はその声を聞くと震え上がって余計一生懸命に中から押さえていました。すると雉が屋根の上から飛び降りてきて門を押さえている鬼どもの目をつつき回りましたから鬼は平行して逃げ出しました。その間に猿がスルスルと高い岩壁をよじ登っていって造作なく門を中から開けました。わあ、と声を上げて、桃太郎の家来たちが勇ましくお城の中へ攻め込んでいきますと、鬼の大将も大勢の家来を引き連れて、一人一人太い鉄の棒を振り回しながら、おうおうと叫んで向かってきました。けれども、体が大きいばっかりで、意気地のない鬼どもは、散々雉に目をつつかれた上に、今度は犬に向こうすねを食いつかれたと言っては、痛い痛いと逃げ回り、猿に顔を引っかかれたと言っては、ほいおい泣き出して、鉄の棒を放り出して、降参してしまいました。おしまいまで我慢して戦っていた鬼の大将もとうとう桃太郎に組み伏せられてしまいました。桃太郎は大きな鬼の背中に馬乗りにまたがって、どうだこれでも降参しないかと言ってぎゅうぎゅう押さえつけました。鬼の大将は桃太郎の馬鹿力で首を絞められて、もう苦しくってたまりませんから、大粒の涙をボロボロこぼしながら、降参します、 降参します。命だけはお助けください。その代わりに宝物を残らず差し上げます。こう言って許してもらいました。鬼の大将は約束通りお城から隠れ蓑に隠れ傘、内出の小槌に如意宝珠、その他サンゴだの瑠璃だの世界で一番尊い宝物を山のように車に積んで出しました。桃太郎はたくさんの宝物を残らず積んで、三人の家来と一緒にまた船に乗りました。帰りは行きよりもまた一層船の走るのが早くって、間もなく日本の国に着きました。船が丘に着きますと、宝物をいっぱい積んだ車を犬が先に立って引き出しました。キジが綱を引いて猿が後を押しました。えんやらさ、えんやらさ、三人は重そうに掛け声をかけかけ進んでいきました。うちではおじいさんとおばあさんが変わる変わる、もう桃太郎が帰りそうなものだが、と言い、首を伸ばして待っていました。そこへ桃太郎が三人の立派な家来に、ぶんどった宝物を引かせて、得意げに帰ってきましたので、おじいさんもおばあさんも、目も鼻もなくして喜びました。偉いぞ、偉いぞ、それこそ日本一だ、とおじいさんは言いました。まあまあ、怪我がなくって何よりさ、とおばあさんは言いました。桃太郎はその時、犬と猿とキジの方を向いてこう言いました。鬼退治は面白かったなぁ。犬はワンワンと嬉しそうに吠えながら前足で立ちました。猿はキャッキャと笑いながら白い歯をむき出しました。キジはケンケンと泣きながらくるくると宙返りをしました。空は青々と晴れ上がって、庭には桜の花が咲き乱れていました。
Last music for this edition, we heard Alec K. Redfern and the Eyesores doing Carnivore. Then Fusan, huh, out of Japan doing Momotaro. The Momos are peaches, right? Peach Boy, Taro's a boy's name there. And it's a classic story, and I just thought it was great going with your music. Because we end up the show, last tune is the Fire Shuffle. Alec K. Redfern and the Eyesores. Where did Eyesores come from, by the way? It's not that important, but.
The end of the 90s in Providence, there was a lot of, like, Providence is a weird old city. You've been here, you know what it's like. Yeah. It's kind of a small, there was a lot of new architecture. There was a mall that went up downtown. A lot of weird new architecture.
Gentrification, when all the streets downtown went one way.
Yep, exactly. And that was what the title, The Eyesores, was sort of referring to, is the sort of ruins of, or the sort of like ruins to be that started
out. Remember there was a cafe, but it was in a trailer? Is it still down there?
Oh, yeah, the Haven Brothers. That's still out there, man. That place is great.
Like, they saved that, right? They gentrified everything around it, but okay.
You know. It's one of the holdouts, man.
Right.
Buddy Cianci's gone, so like.
You got to know about this guy, listeners. He was the mayor, and I know the guy who ran his boat, Joe DiPasquale. In fact, he was a councilman in Warren, nearby.
Okay.
And the stories he told me about, yeah. In fact, he was docking the boat, and the rope cut his fucking finger off. He's got a finger. Hey, Mr. Watt, look.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, where can people find you on the internet there, Alec?
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Cuneiform, let's see. I have a Facebook page, and I have a Facebook pages. I have Instagram, you know, under Alec K. Redfern on Instagram. There is a Doom Facebook page.
Yeah, but those are big fucking companies. There's nothing that you run yourself?
I have a website that I ended up going down, and we've been, my girlfriend and I have been trying to rebuild it.
Do you know the URL?
Yeah, that is alekredfern.com, but there's nothing up there right now.
Right, but in the future there will be, because that's like having your own fanzine. There's no middleman. There's no, although I'm not afraid of Steve. Uniform, but those big companies, yeah, I'm kind of scared about that. But, you know, it's a telephone pole for you to put your flyers up on. Why not? Fuck it.
That's true, man. Yeah, and I think I probably will. I stole the domain, so might as well, you know.
And what's your next plan? What's the next proj? Is it more Doom? Because that's the new thing. Or because the eyesores, it's an ongoing concern, right?
The eyesores, it's been dormant because of COVID. We haven't been rehearsing too much.
Yeah, of course. Besides the situation, it's still an ongoing concern.
It is, and it's going to change the whole paradigm. We have to think of new ways to be, to play out, to tour. Like, all that's going to change. And it's a time for innovation. That's the way I see it. It's an opportunity for innovation. But
is there a parallel? Are you doing two music parallel universes, a D-U-M-E Doom one and a Eyesore one?
Yeah, so far they've been kind of mutually exclusive, but there may be some crossover. I was thinking about doing an Eyesore sort of synth record, or at least something that's more sort of like, like Cold Wave-ish or something, or more experimental. I'm not sure yet. Matt and I got to start jamming again. I think
Well, let me ask you this. Now, I know about Doom. That's Man Alone, so that's you. You know, the process, you make demos for yourself or whatever, but when what is the process with human beings, you know, the eyesores? Do you make demos, or do you, like you just said, jam, and then you record things, and then later go back on them and try to put them together into tunes?
It's a little bit of both, you know, because Matt and I do a lot, have wrote a lot of stuff, just working it out in his basement. But then for the opposite, the last record, a good deal of the songs are based around like demos I made with this really primitive drum machine, just a drum that had like literally two rhythms on it. I just added a delay pedal to get a little more variation, and just, you know, to work within limitations, you know, because limitations are sometimes make for really interesting stuff.
Absolutely.
And I've been listening to like stuff like Suicide's first record,
great album.
So good.
Frankie,
so good.
Frankie Teardrop is the scariest fucking song in the world.
It really is, man. It's terrifying. It's, like, legitimately terrifying. It's one of those moments in rock and roll that has just never really been touched. It's just really its own fucking weird, dark universe.
Yeah. Ooh, Frankie. Ooh. I got to meet them. They opened up for the Stooges when the Stooges did, Raw Power at the Odeon. And they were the opening band. And I got to talk to Alan Vega, and a very kind man. He told me he was an artist, and just seeing Ig, seeing Stooges and Max's, I want to be in a band.
Yeah.
You know, just like you and your buddies, man. That this is the power of the movement. It's not a genre sound. It's a state of mind. That's what I believe, anyway.
Oh, I think you're right. I think the whole genre thing is just a marketing thing, and especially this crazy new micro-genre thing that's happened in the last 10 years or so.
We don't need it. I'm really, really interested in what you're going to do next. When you get the next Doom record and next Eyesore record, will you come back on the show and we can talk
Absolutely.
About it? Absolutely.
And quickly before we go, there is a Doom record that's dropping today, a new cassette that's coming out called Forever 93. And if you want to check that out, it's at doom.bandcamp.com, I believe is the address. And, with the digital versions up,
people,
we're going to have
that Doom, I got to tell you, that Doom ain't D-O-O-M. It's D-U-M-E.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you know what they call them, homonyms, right? The nose knows.
Right.
I see the C. Thanks so much for being on the show, Al. Truly a big honor. Can't wait for the next music. People, been the April 28, 2021 edition WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.